Accession number 18338, Real One.
David Fisher, Real One. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Maidstone in Kent.
Which year was this?
1929.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Maidstone?
Yes, I did. First of all, starting at the local village school and then on to the grammar school in Maidstone.
How old were you when you left the grammar school?
About 17 and a half.
So this was after the Second World War had ended?
Yes, shortly after.
So you spent the whole of your boyhood in Maidstone?
Yep.
What was it like as a boy in Maidstone growing up in the Second World War?
The food wasn't terribly good, but nobody actually went hungry. We lived in fairly exciting times, because obviously we had the Battle of Britain fought basically over our head. We did things which we would never have done before, like kept our own chicken. But as a youth, you make what's ever there. We enjoyed it, I suppose, really. I don't remember ever being really frightened. I know that at one stage during the Blitz, we spent many evenings in the air raid shelter, which my father dug in the garden. But it was a happy life.
Did Maidstone get much aerial attack from the German Air Force?
There were a couple of attacks, not directly on Maidstone. I feel that it was more that they were jettisoning the bombs on the way home. They hadn't reached their actual target. There wasn't really much point in bombing Maidstone, unless, of course, you went for the railway line. But there were several strings of bombs dropped in Maidstone. More problems were with the flying bombs later on, because they were almost directly routed up through Kent, and so they were almost continuous stream. That is the V1, as opposed to the V2.
Did any V1s hit the town?
No, but a lot landed all the way around it. The local paper, or rather the county paper, the Kent Messenger, has produced a superb map showing the site of every bomb that landed. Something like 4/5 of the bombs actually landed in Kent, didn't reach London.
Do you remember any specific buildings or streets that were hit by bombs?
It's a long time ago. The bottom of Gabriel's Hill in Maidstone was hit. Levy's was hit. But otherwise than that, I don't remember very much. I remember particularly being at school at when the Battle of Britain was on, that we had very large shelters built in the school grounds, and every time the siren went, we all trooped off down into the trenches, which were air raid shelters rather, which were completely badly lit. Several days a week we didn't go. Our school also, what should we say, hosted another school, which I think was Elaine's from London. They were evacuated down into our area, so we had to share the school with another school. So consequently, the years between sort of when I was between 12 and about 14, the education was a bit spasmodic.
What was your address in Maidstone during the war?
We lived at, do you want the full address?
Yes, please.
52 Boughton, Boughton Lane, Lewes, Lowse, Maidstone. Lewes is a small valley, a small village rather, on the outskirts of Maidstone. Pronounced Lewes, spelt loose, looks superb, written up outside the Women's Institute.
And did any bombs fall near you in Lewes?
I don't remember, certainly not high explosives. At some stage there were quite a few incendiary bombs dropped. They were during the early part of the war. I remember my father was most distressed when I brought one home, an unexploded one. He didn't take very kindly to that. They were really small, about £25, I would think.
And what was Levi's that was hit?
It was a big clothing place. I forgot what it's called now. It was either Levi's or Cheeseman's, one of the two. It was a big male outfitters and general sort of clothing store. And one of the pubs was hit. I think there were several people killed in there.
What was public morale like in the war as far as you could observe?
I think it was pretty high. I think people got a bit tired on occasions. One didn't sleep frightfully well in a shelter. Children did, but I think some of the adults found life a bit tedious. A lot of them, of course, made themselves useful in many other ways. My father had been in the First World War, immediately volunteered for the LDV. He was too old and had been badly injured in the First World War to re-enlist again. So he joined, first of all, the LDV, the Local Defence Volunteers, which later, of course, became the Home Guard, and was commissioned in that. I became an ARP messenger for the wardens, which really meant I was a sort of, literally what it says, a messenger boy. I delivered things. We really didn't do a lot, but I suppose all in our own ways we tried to help a bit.
Any particular things that you did do that you remember?
We raised a lot of money. Because the one thing that the group of wardens that I worked with, they were all local people from Lewes Village, were pretty good on the Amateur Dramatic Society. So every year we produced a thing at Christmas which was always sold out and always went on for about a week. And we made a great deal of money for the war effort. I think my one claim to fame was that I was the cat in Dick Whittington.
Was there much hatred of the Germans in the Second World War?
I think hatred is too strong a word. I've lately come back from Crete. Now, there's hatred. Because they were occupied, we never were. I remember being fairly upset when we had a small girl arrive at the local school, that's a village school, Lewes Village School. Her name was Zita Levi. She arrived at the school, couldn't speak a word of English. She was German, or so we thought, but it was only a matter about a year before I discovered, of course, that she must have been the equivalent of one of the Schindler children. They somehow got her out. She was entirely on her own, spoke nothing else but German. It might have been even Polish, but I'm pretty sure it was German. Within 2 years, everybody had forgotten, because she then, of course, spoke perfect English. But I remember thinking at the time how desperately unfair it was that this little girl was there. She couldn't have been more than 9 or 10. With nobody else.
How was she treated by the other children?
Well, she wasn't actually in my class, but within perhaps 7 or 8 months, she was just Zita. I mean, she might just as well have been a village girl.
She was accepted?
Oh, yes, completely.
What did you think was going to be the outcome of the war?
Well, I had no doubt we would win it.
Even at the fall of France?
Yes.
Did you ever listen to Churchill or Lord Haw-Haw?
Both. Haw-Haw was funny because he was mimicked so much. Churchill was a great speaker. There was absolutely no question about that. I remember quite clearly Neville Churchill at 11 o'clock on that fateful morning, saying that they'd received no reply, etc. He had nothing like the power of speech that Churchill had. Churchill was a could have been a complete rabble-rouser.
Were there any particular celebrations in your village at the end of the war?
Which, are you talking about VE Day or VJ Day?
Either.
Well, VE Day, I was, of course, then considerably older. I would have been about, 16 or 17 at least. No, about 15, 16. I think Maidstone, the actual town, had more to interest me than the local village. I remember shooting into town, because that's obviously a much bigger area and there was much more going on there. Everything was full, people were shouting and dancing, etc. VJ Day, I think I was in Ipswich, and that was pretty hectic as well.
What took you to Ipswich?
I had some relatives there.
Were there many troops around Maidstone in the Second World War?
Well, we had a barracks in Maidstone anyway, which is the barracks of the Royal West Kents as it was then. One particular thing I do remember was that about 3-4 miles away from Lewes Village, there was another area, and we had at one stage in there, I think about a battalion and a half of New Zealand soldiers who were destined to go to Crete as part of the Australian-New Zealand force that went to Crete. I remember them quite clearly. I think it was my first sight of a Maori. Later on, I got to know the Maoris very well. But I remember also my father meeting one on the bus and bringing him home to tea to make him sort of welcome. I can't remember his name or anything, but it was just a sort of childish memory.
He was a Maori New Zealand soldier?
Yes, there was a complete, either a battalion or a battalion and a half of them there, I would think.
How did the soldiers behave in the Maidstone area in the war?
No problem, but I think we'd have to take into consideration that for me to go into the Maidstone, it meant a trip on the trolley bus. It's only about 20, 25 minutes, I suppose, but normally I wouldn't have gone in there in the evening, so I really wouldn't have known.
Were there any foreign POWs in the area?
Yes, we had some Italians and some Germans, mainly working on the farms in the area.
Did you see much of them?
I remember seeing a few Italians, but not really much of them. Probably took no notice. As far as I know that there were absolutely no problem, any of them. There was never any escapes or anything that I know of.
What was the attitude of local people towards them?
Neither one thing nor t'other.
Now, coming on to how you joined the army yourself, please, after the war.
Yeah, well, I had... I was due to be called up for national service anyway. I was hoping to either go to university or teachers' training college before I did my national service, and then thought, well, no, I will do my national service first, and then sort the university or training college out afterwards. So as a result, I was called up on the 4th of March, 1948.
How did you feel about it, having to do a national service?
Well, it was great fun. Most of my friends were older than I was anyway, and in consequence I'd seen them home on leave and found out sort of lots of bits and pieces. I'd been in the officers training corps at school anyway. My father had been in the army. I was rather looking forward to it.
What was the first step after you'd been called up?
Well, I found, amongst other things, that I'd been called up into the regiment which my father had served in the First World War, which was a complete twist. I was called up and went into the Rifle Brigade, which now flourishes quite nicely on television as Sharp's Rifles.
So where did you do the basic training?
I did the basic training at Barton Stacey.
Where's that?
That's near Winchester, which is their depot.
What was the basic training like?
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Because we get a lot of publicity on the media nowadays about ill treatment of national servicemen in those days, supposedly, on basic training.
Well, I didn't find any of it, quite honestly. I think also much of it depends on sort of background that you've led, or background rather that you've had. You can't lead a background. I know that in the hut that I was in, there were several lads from not from an extremely good background who had never made a cup of tea in their lives and were quite incapable of looking after themselves. One feels that these were the people who thought they'd been mistreated. Like one sort of childish episode, there was another chap in the same background, a boy called Ziegler, who later on I think became the adjutant of the battalion. When we went to bed that first night, obviously sheets and things weren't issued, we just had blankets. And out of the hut, which must have held 30 people, it was the old fashioned Nissen hut with a stove in the middle, only two of us had pyjamas. And both of us looked at each other and put them back in our suitcases and got into bed in what was known in the rifle brigade as those days as in our shreddies, which was the underwear.
Shreddies?
They were called shreddies. I have no idea why. They were basically an air tech sort of underpant type thing. And they were shreddies. But it's always stuck out of my mind that only two of us out of 30 had pyjamas. The others must have been unheard of. I mean, you didn't wear pyjamas.
How did the recruits from different backgrounds get on with each other?
Oh, surprisingly well. The regiment had previously recruited, when they were first formed, from the East End of London, or they went for gamekeepers, poachers and that sort of thing, because they were the enlisted men and the sharpshooters, etc. So they really wanted people who could be sharpshooters. And so we had quite a percentage of country lads who were obviously of a country background, but probably more than half were sort of East End Londoner. The King's Royal Rifle Corps, which shared the same barracks, also had the same recruiting background.
How did you get on with EastEnders?
Excellent. Probably, amongst other things, because A, Maidstone isn't too far away from London, although travel wasn't easy, and B, further down the Weald, it's a great hop growing area. And as a kid, I'd worked on the hop farms and met the hop pickers, who were, of course, East End Londoners. And they brought life to the place, which was normally dead during the winter. So I got on excellently with them, had absolutely no problem.
What kind of soldiers did they make?
Good soldiers. I think it was Sir James Craig, who was Chief of Staff many years ago, who said, "Give me men of hardihood and intelligence rather than men of stature." I think he's possibly referring to the guards in this case. But most of them were streetwise. They learned quickly because they were a different regiment, because they marched faster than other people. They carried rifles in different ways. They wore different coloured hats. I think they were rather chuffed to be in it.
How were you treated by the people in charge of the basic training?
Very well. I was fairly lucky, as I said. I was in the OTC at school, and you had a pretty good idea of things. I think I'd take my cert A before I joined, anyway. The result was that in a fairly short time, I'd got the sort of squad leader badge type thing. So, I mean, I wasn't sort of kicked about at all.
And after the basic training?
I was then transferred to the Royal Army Educational Corps, which took me to Beaconsfield in Scotland. Check. Buchanan Castle near Drimmen in Scotland.
How did you feel about being transferred to the Education Corps?
Well, they made me a sergeant, which which of course is the lowest, was the lowest rank in the Corps then, but having soldiered on as a humble rifleman on 4 shillings a day, to go up to 10 and sixpence a day as a sergeant within 3 months was very useful.
Do you know why you've been transferred into the Education Corps?
Well, I suppose it was because I certainly had the qualifications required at that stage. I had intended to train as a teacher or go to university. That had obviously on my document somewhere, and I had the required qualifications. So there were about 4 of us taken from Barton Stacey up to Buchanan Castle and completed the training to get into the Royal Army Educational Corps.
What kind of training did you have with them at first?
Well, basically it was being taught how to teach. But when I'd left school, before my national service started, I'd already done pupil teaching at one of the local schools in Maidstone. My father had been a headmaster in the town anyway. And I'd also taught for 2 terms at a small private school in Maidstone. So presumably all this was on my documents when I got into the army. So I was the sort of semi-ideal candidate to go into the Royal Army Educational Corps.
What kind of advice did they give you for teaching soldiers?
Well, to put it obviously at a different angle, we did, I think it was a 3 months course, and we gave lots of sort of specimen lessons and this sort of thing, which I didn't find desperately difficult because I'd been doing much the same thing with a civilian school anyway. All I did was pitch it at a different level instead of doing things almost entirely on the blackboard. I got empty cigarette packets and matchboxes and said, well, you know, if you bought that and that, how much would it add up to, rather than doing it in straight theory. Yeah, it was quite good fun. It was quite good fun.
Were you told what the objectives were?
Oh, yes. Yes. They were difficult to define, but throughout the service history, there have been hurdles to climb, or rather, standards to be met, and these were normally tested. So we knew that we would be teaching towards an examination system which would qualify people for their ranks. And this, plus the fact we were also doing something called ABCA, Army Bureau of Current Affairs, and BWP, British Way and Purpose. This was to keep the troops familiar with what was going on.
So, you mean politically?
Some of them were a little political, but most of them were trying to explain to troops what was actually happening in the world.
You said you did a 3 months course.
Yes.
What happened to you then?
I was posted to Catterick, first of all, to 3 Training Regiment Royal Signals, I think it was, the 1st Regiment. gosh, that's a long time ago. And I spent the next 2 or 3 years either in Catterick, Richmond in Yorkshire, at the Green Howards depot, but again there was a signals detachment up there. The Remy workshops in Catterick. I was then posted down to York, Northern Command Mixed Signal Regiment. And then I was posted, let's get this right because I cannot remember the chap's name. I received a phone call one morning. By this stage I was a warrant officer too, actually. In the Royal Army Educational Corps at that stage, there was no staff sergeant rank or colour sergeant. So, since the basic rank was sergeant, if you got promoted once, you were automatically a 002 because there was no staff sergeant rank. I'd made this before I was 19 years old, which sounds incredible now. But it was paid acting, it wasn't substantive. But I was getting the money for it, I was doing the job. I got a phone call one morning. It was from another 002 who I think was somewhere up in Northumbria. I didn't know the chap's name, and he introduced himself and said, had I seen the postings broadcast? And I said, no, that I hadn't. He said, do you know where you're going? I said, no, I've just said that because I haven't seen the posting forecast. He said, well, you've been posted to Kenya. I said, oh, good old, I've never been to Kenya. He said, now comes the point. Will you swap postings? And I said, well, why? He said, well, I'm a married man and I have 2 children. I said, so? He said, I've been posted to Korea in the 1st Reinforcement Group. Will you swap? It took about a millionth of a second to say, but of course I will. I went to Korea, he went to Kenya, got a bullet in the throat against the Mau Mau.
When would that have been?
Well, I was trying to think of this the other day when you rang up, actually. It was the 1st Reinforcement Group. We went out on the foy. I remember going to see, and it had only just opened, the Festival of Britain, which would be 1951. So that's as near as I can get without sort of turning out all sorts of rubbish and seeing if I can find exactly what data went.
Just before we got on to Korea, can I go back to when you were in Yorkshire?
Mm-hmm.
Were you teaching soldiers
yes.
then?
Yes, yes.
How did you find it in practice?
Oh, great fun. Great fun. They were keen to learn. They needed it for promotion. And the relationship is vastly different. They will query things, whereas I was trained as a primary school teacher. Very few primary school teachers will query, children will query anything. They're there to absorb it, whereas if you're teaching adults, they will query, often very difficult to teach. Some of them